They all felt most at home in Kyan's dining room. While most people added personal touches to their study or reception room, Kyan's love was his food, and the dining room the place where he shared his talent. The room's decorations, mementos from Kyan's travels, including everything from dried vegetables to a large ornamental axe, were comfortingly familiar. There was never any discussion about it. They all just naturally came to this room when they met. They had to wait a few more moments before Lucul finally decided to return. Eventually, they heard the door open and close. Then her cousin's amiable face popped in the door. Ahane and Kyan were with him. "Well?" Serene asked. "Telrai definitely intends to take the throne," Lucul said.
"Not with my legion backing Roil, he won't," Eondel said.
"Unfortunately, my dear general," Ahame said, settling his bulk into a chair, "your legion isn't here. You have barely a dozen men at your disposal."
"It's more than Telrai has," Serene pointed out.
"Not anymore, it isn't," Ahane said. "The Elantra City Guard left their posts to set up camp outside Telrai's mansion."
Eondel snorted.
"The guard is hardly more than a club for second sons who want to pretend they're important."
"True," Ahane said. "But there are over 600 people in that club. At 50-1 odds, even I would fight against your legion. I'm afraid the balance of power has shifted in Telrai's favor."
"This is bad," Roil agreed.
"Telrai's superior wealth was a great problem before, but now..."
"There's got to be a way," Lucul said.
"I don't see one," Roil confessed.
The men frowned, deep in thought. However, they'd all been pondering this very problem for 2 days. Even if they'd had the military edge, the other aristocrats would be hesitant to support Roil, who was the less wealthy man. As Serene studied each lord in turn, her eyes fell on Shuden. He seemed hesitant rather than worried.
"What?" she asked quietly.
"I think I may have a way," he said tentatively.
"Speak on, man," Ahane said.
"Well, Serene is still very wealthy," Shuden explained. "Raoden left her at least 500,000 dios."
"We discussed this, Shuden," Lucul said. "She has a lot of money, but still less than Roil."
"True," Shuden agreed. "But together, they would have far more than Telrai." The room grew quiet.
"Your marriage contract is technically void, my lady," Aishi said from behind. "It dissolved as soon as Iodin killed himself, thereby removing his line from the throne. The moment someone else becomes king, be it Telrai or Roil, the treaty will end, and you will cease to be an Aerilish princess."
Shuden nodded. "If you unify your fortune with that of Lord Roil, it would not only give you the money to stand against Telrai, it would also legitimize the Duke's claim. Don't assume that lineage doesn't matter in Aerilon. The nobles would much rather give their loyalty to one of Iodin's relatives." Roil found her with eyes like those of a benevolent grandfather.
"I must admit that young Shuden has a point. The marriage would be strictly political, Serene."
Serene took a breath. Things happened so quickly.
"I understand, my lord.
We will do what must be done."
And so, for the second time in only 2 months, Serene was engaged to be married.
That wasn't very romantic, I'm afraid,
Roal apologized. The meeting was over, and Roal had discreetly offered to escort Serene back to the palace. The others, including Aishi, had realized that the two needed to talk alone.
It's all right, my lord, Serene said with a slight smile. That is how political marriages are supposed to be. Dry, contrived, but extremely useful.
You're very pragmatic.
I have to be, my lord.
Roal frowned. Must we return to the my lords, Serene? I thought we were beyond that.
I'm sorry, Roal, Serene said. It's just hard to separate my personal self from my political self.
Roal nodded. I meant what I said, Serene. This will be strictly a union of convenience. Do not fear yourself obligated in any other way.
Serene rode quietly for a moment, listening to the horses' hooves clop in front of them.
There will need to be heirs.
Roal laughed quietly. No, Serene. Thank you, but no. Even if such were physically possible, I couldn't go through with it. I am an old man, and can't possibly survive more than a few years. This time, your wedding contract won't forbid you from remarrying after I die. When I'm gone, you can finally choose a man of your own preference. By then we will have replaced Iodine's silly system with something more stable, and your children with the third husband will inherit the throne.
Third husband. Roal spoke as if he were already dead, herself a widow twice over.
Well, she said, if things do happen as you suggest, then at least I wouldn't have trouble attracting a husband. The throne would be a tempting prize, even if I were attached to it.
Roal's face hardened.
This is something I've been meaning to discuss with you, Serene.
What?
You're far too harsh on yourself. I've heard the way you speak. You assume that nobody wants you.
They don't, Serene said flatly. Trust me.
Roal shook his head.
You're an excellent judge of character, Serene. Except your own. Often our own opinions of ourselves are the most unrealistic. You may see yourself as an old maid child, but you are young, and you are beautiful. Just because you've had misfortune in your past doesn't mean you have to give up on your future.
He looked into her eyes. For all his mischievous shows, this was a man of sage understanding.
You will find someone to love you, Serene, Roal promised. You are a prize even greater than the throne you'll be attached to.
Serene blushed, looking down. Still, his words were encouraging. Perhaps she did have a hope. She would probably be in her mid-30s, but she would have at least one more chance to find the right man.
Anyway, Roal said, our wedding will have to come soon if we are going to beat Telrai.
What do you suggest?
The day of Iodine's funeral, Roal said. Technically, Iodine's reign doesn't end until his burial.
4 days. It would be a short engagement, indeed.
I just worry at the necessity of putting you through all of this, Roal said. It can't be easy to consider marrying such a dusty old man.
Serene laid her hand on that of the Duke, smiling at the sweetness in his tone. All things considered, my lord, I think I'm rather fortunate. There are very few men in this world I would actually consider it an honor to be forced to marry.
Roile smiled a wrinkly smile, his eyes twinkling.
It's a shame Ahane's already married, isn't it?
Serene removed her hand and swatted him on the shoulder.
I've had enough emotional shocks for 1 week, Roile. I'll kindly thank you not to make me sick to my stomach as well.
The Duke laughed at length. When his merriment died down, however, another sound replaced it. Yelling. Serene tensed, but the yells weren't ones of anger or pain. They seemed joyful and excited. Confused, she looked out the carriage window and saw a crowd of people surging through a cross street.
"What in the name of Domai is that?"
Roile asked. Their carriage drew closer, allowing Serene to make out a tall form at the center of the crowd.
Serene grew numb. But that's impossible.
What?
Roile asked, squinting.
It's Raythan, Serene said with wide eyes. He's left Elantris.
Then she realized something else. The Yorn's face was unspotted, flesh-colored.
Merciful Domai! He's been healed!
Chapter 36. When dawn signaled the fifth day of Raythan's exile, he knew that he had made a mistake. He would die in Elantris. 5 days was too long to go without drink, and he knew there was no water to be had in the City of the Damned. He didn't regret his actions. He had behaved in the most logical way. It had been desperate logic, but rational nonetheless. Had he continued in Kaye, he would have grown more impotent with each turning day. No, it was much better to die of dehydration. He grew increasingly delirious as the fifth day passed. At times, he saw Dilaf laughing over him. At others, the Teowish princess did the same. Once he even thought he saw Yadith himself, his face burning red with the heat of godly disappointment as he looked down on Raythan. The delusions soon changed, however. He no longer saw faces, no longer felt humiliated and scorned. In their place, he was confronted with something much more horrid. Memories of Dachor. Once again, the dark, hollow cubicles of the monastery surrounded him. Screams echoed through the black stone hallways. Cries of bestial agony mixing with solemn chanting. Chanting that had a strange power to it. The boy, Raythan, knelt obediently, waiting, crouched in a cubicle no larger than a closet, sweat streaming past terrified eyes, knowing that eventually they would come for him. Wrathbor Monastery trained assassins. Fjeldor Monastery trained spies. Dachor Monastery trained demons. His delirium broke sometime in the early afternoon, releasing him for a time. Like a cat allowing its prey to run free one last time, before striking a deadly blow. Raythan roused his weakened body from the hard stones, his matted clothing sticking to the slimy surface. He didn't remember pulling into a fetal position. With a sigh, Raythan rubbed a hand over his dirty, grime-stained scalp, a senseless but reflexive attempt to wipe away the dirt. His fingers scraped against something rough and bristly. Stubble. Raythan sat upright, shock providing momentary strength. He reached with trembling fingers, searching out the small flask that had contained his sacrificial wine.
He wiped the glass as best he could with a dirty sleeve, then peered at his spectral reflection. It was distorted and unclear, but it was enough. The spots were gone. His skin, though covered with dirt, was as fresh and unblemished as it had been 5 days before. Fortin's potion had finally worn off. He had begun to think that it never would, that Fortin had forgotten to make the effects temporary. It was amazing enough that the Rovan man could create a potion that made one's body mimic the afflictions of an Elantrian. But Raythan had misjudged the apothecary. He had done as asked, even if the effects had lasted a bit longer than expected. Of course, if Raythan didn't get himself out of Elantris quickly, he might still die. Raythan stood, gathering his remaining strength and bolstering it with excited adrenaline.
"Behold!" he screamed toward the guardhouse above. "Witness the power and glory of Lord Yadith. I have been healed."
There was no response. Perhaps it was too far for his voice to carry. Then, looking along the walls, he noticed something. There were no guards. No patrols or watches marched their rounds. No telltale tips of spears marked their presence. They had been there the day before. Or had it been the day before that? The last 3 days had become something of a blur in his mind. One extended set of prayers, hallucinations, and the occasional exhausted nap. Where had the guards gone? They considered it their solemn duty to watch Elantris, as if anything threatening could ever come from the rotting city. The Elantris City Guard performed a useless function, but that function gave them notoriety. The guards would never give up their posts. Except they had. Raythan began to scream again, feeling the strength leak from his body. If the guard wasn't there to open the gates, then he was doomed. Irony tickled at his mind. The only Elantrian to ever be healed would die because of a collection of incompetent, negligent guards. The gate suddenly cracked open. Another hallucination? But then a head poked through the gap. The avaricious captain that Raythan had been nurturing.
"My lord?"
the guard asked hesitantly. Then, looking Raythan up and down with wide eyes, he inhaled sharply.
"Gracious Domai! It's true! You've been healed!"
"Lord Yadith has heard my pleas, Captain," Raythan announced with what strength he could manage. "The taint of Elantris has been removed from my body."
The captain's head disappeared for a moment, then, slowly, the gate opened all the way, revealing a group of wary guards.
"Come, my lord."
Raythan rose to his feet. He hadn't even noticed sinking to his knees, and walked on shaky legs to the gate. He turned, resting his hand on the wood, one side filthy and grime-stained, the other side bright and clean, and looked back at Elantris. A few huddled shapes watched him from the top of a building.
"Enjoy your damnation, my friends," Raythan whispered, then motioned for the guards to shut the gate.
"I really shouldn't be doing this, you know," the captain said. "Once a man is thrown into Elantris."
"Yadith rewards those who obey him, Captain," Raythan said, "often at the hands of his servants."
The captain's eyes brightened, and Raythan was suddenly very grateful he had begun bribing the man.
"Where are the rest of your men, Captain?"
"Protecting the new king," the captain said proudly.
"'New king?' Raythan asked. "'You've missed a lot, my lord. Lord Telrai rules in Aerilan now. Or at least he will as soon as Iodin's funeral is over.'
Weakened as he was, Raythan could only stand in shock. "'Iodin dead? Telrai seizing control?' How could 5 days bring about such drastic events?
Come, Raythan said firmly. You can explain it to me on the way to the chapel.
The crowds gathered around him as he walked. The captain owned no carriage, and Raythan didn't want to bother waiting for one. For the moment, the exhilaration of a plan fulfilled was enough to keep him moving. The crowds helped as well. As news spread, the people, servants, merchants, and nobles alike, came to stare at the recovered Elantrian. All parted before him, regarding him with looks that ranged from stunned to worshipful, some reaching out to touch his Elantrian robe in awe. The trip was crowded, but uneventful. Except for one moment, when he looked down a side street and recognized the Teoish princess's head poking out of a carriage window. In that moment, Raythan felt a sense of fulfillment that rivaled the day he had become a full Yorn. His healing wasn't just unexpected. It was unfathomable. There was no way Serene could have planned for it. For once, Raythan had total and complete advantage. When he reached the chapel, Raythan turned to the mass of people with raised hands. His clothing was still stained, but he held himself as if to make the grime a badge of pride. The dirt signaled his suffering, proving that he had traveled to the very pit of damnation and returned with his soul intact.
"'People of Aerilan,' he yelled, "'know ye this day who is master. Let your hearts and souls be guided by the religion which can offer evidence of divine support. Lord Yadith is the only god in Sikla. If you need proof of this, look at my hands that are clean from rot.' My face that is pure and unblemished, and my scalp rough with stubble. Lord Yadith tested me, and as I relied on him, he blessed me. I have been healed!
He lowered his hands, and the crowd roared their approval. Many had probably doubted after Raythan's apparent fall, but they would return with renewed dedication. The converts he made now would be stronger than any that had come before. Raythan entered the chapel, and the people remained outside. Raythan walked with increasing fatigue, the energy of the moment finally giving way to 5 days' worth of strain. He flopped to his knees before the altar, bowing his head in sincere prayer. It didn't bother him that the miracle was an effect of Fortin's potion. Raythan had found that most supposed miracles were either natural or the result of human intervention. Yadith was behind them, as he was behind all things, using natural phenomena to increase the faith of man. Raythan raised praises to God for giving him the capacity to think of the plan, the means to execute it, and the climate to make it succeed. The captain's arrival had certainly been a result of divine will. That the man would leave Telrai's camp just when Raythan needed him, and that he would hear Raythan yelling through the thick wood was simply too much to be a coincidence. Yadith might not have cursed Raythan with the Sheod, but he had certainly been behind the planned success. Drained, Raythan finished his prayer and lurched to his feet. As he did so, he heard a chapel door open behind him. When he turned, Delaf stood behind him. Raythan sighed. This was a confrontation he had hoped to avoid until he'd had some rest. Delaf, however, fell to his knees before Raythan.
"My Roden," he whispered.
Raythan blinked in surprise. "Yes, Artith?"
"I doubted you, my Roden," Delaf confessed. "I thought Lord Yadith had cursed you for incompetence. Now I see that your faith is much stronger than I realized. I know why you were chosen to hold the position of Yorn."
"Your apology is accepted, Artith," Raythan said, trying to keep the fatigue from his voice. "All men question in times of trial. The days following my exile must have been difficult for you and the other priests."
"We should have had more faith."
"Learn from these events, then, Artith. And next time, do not allow yourself to doubt. You may go."
Delaf moved to leave. As the man rose, Raythan studied his eyes. There was respect there, but not as much penitence as the Artith was trying to show. He looked more confused than anything. He was amazed and unsettled, but he was not pleased. The battle was not over yet. Too tired to worry about Delaf for the moment, Raythan stumbled back to his quarters and pulled open the door. His possessions were piled in one corner of the room, as if waiting to be hauled away for disposal. Suddenly apprehensive, Raythan rushed to the pile. He found the Sion trunk beneath a pile of clothing. Its lock was broken. Raythan opened the lid with anxious fingers and pulled out the steel box inside. The front of the box was covered with scrapes, scratches, and dents. Hurriedly, Raythan opened the box. Several of the levers were bent and the dial stuck, so he was extremely relieved when he heard the lock click open. He lifted the lid with anxious hands. The Sion floated inside, unperturbed. The three remaining vials of potion lay next to it. Two had cracked, leaking their contents into the bottom of the box.
"Did anyone open this box since I last spoke through you?" Raythan asked.
"No, my lord," the Sion replied in her melancholy voice.
"Good," Raythan said, snapping the lid closed. After that, he drank a careful amount of wine from a flask he got from the pile, then collapsed on the bed and fell asleep. It was dark when he awakened. His body was still tired, but he forced himself to rise. A vital piece of his plans could not wait. He summoned a particular priest who arrived a short time later. The priest, Dothgen, was a tall man with a powerful Fjordale build and muscles that even managed to bulge through his red Dorethi robes.
"Yes, my lord," Dothgen asked. "You were trained in Wrathbor Monastery, were you not, Artith?" Raythan asked.
"I was, my lord,"
the man responded in a deep voice.
"Good," Raythan said, holding up the last vial of potion.
"I have need of your special skills."
"Who is it for, my lord?"
the priest asked. Like every graduate of Wrathbor, Dothgen was a trained assassin. He had received far more specialized training than Raythan had at Gaian Monastery, the place Raythan had gone after Dachor proved too much for him. Only a Yorn or a Ragnat, however, could make use of Wrathbor-trained priests without Wyrn's permission. Raythan smiled.
Chapter 37. It struck while Raoden was studying. He didn't hear himself gasp in agonized shock, nor did he feel himself tumble from his seat in a spastic seizure. All he felt was the pain, a sharp torment that dropped upon him suddenly and vengefully. It was like a million tiny insects, each one latching onto his body, inside and out, to eat him alive. Soon he felt as if he had no body. The pain was his body. It was the only sense, the only input, and his screams were the only product. Then he felt it. It stood like an enormous, slick surface, without crack or pocket at the back of his mind. It pressed demandingly, pounding the pain into every nerve in his body, like a workman driving a spike into the ground. It was vast. It made men, mountains, and worlds seem paltry. It was not evil, or even sentient. It didn't rage or churn. It was immobile, frozen by its own intense pressure. It wanted to move, to go anywhere, to find any release from the strain. But there was no outlet. Raoden's vision cleared slowly as the force retreated. He lay on the cold marble floor of the chapel, staring up at the bottom of his table. Two hazy faces hovered above him.
"Sule?"
an urgent voice asked, as if from far away.
"Dolokan! Raoden, can you hear me?"
His view sharpened. Kerita's usually stern features were concerned, while Galadin was livid.
"I'm all right," Raoden croaked, shamed. They would realize how weak he was, that he couldn't stand the pain of even a month-long stay in Elantris.
The two helped him sit. He remained on the floor for a moment, before indicating that he wanted to move to the chair. His entire body was sore, as if he had tried to lift a dozen different weights at the same time. He groaned as he slid into the uncomfortable stone seat.
"Sule, what happened?" Galadin asked, retreating hesitantly to his own chair.
"It was the pain," Raoden said, holding his head in his hands and resting his elbows on the table. "It was too much for me for a moment. I'm all right now. It retreated."
Galadin frowned.
"What are you talking about, Sule?"
"The pain," Raoden said with exasperation. "The pain of my cuts and bruises. The bane of life here in Elantris."
"Sule, the pain doesn't come in waves," Galadin said. "It just remains the same."
"It comes in waves for me," Raoden said tiredly.
Galadin shook his head.
"That can't be, Kolo. When you fall to the pain, you snap, and your mind is gone. That's the way it always is. Besides, there's no way you could have accumulated enough cuts and bruises to go hoeed yet."
"You've said that before, Galadin, but this is how it works for me. It comes all of a sudden, as if trying to destroy me, then moves away. Maybe I'm just worse at dealing with it than everyone else."
"My prince," Kerita said hesitantly, "you were glowing."
Raoden looked up at her with shock.
"What?"
"It's true, Sule," Galadin said. "After you collapsed, you began glowing, like an aeon, almost as if—"
Raoden's mouth fell open slightly in amazement.
"As if the door were trying to come through me."
The force had been searching for an opening, a way out.
It had tried to use him like an Aeon.
Why me?
Some people are closer to the door than others, Sule, Galadin said. In Elantris, some people could create Aeons much more powerful than others, and some seem more intimate with the power.
Besides, my prince, Kairita said, are you not the one who knows the Aeons best? We see you practicing them every day.
Raoden nodded slowly, almost forgetting about his agony. During the Riode, they say the most powerful Elantrians were the first to fall. They didn't fight when the mobs burned them.
As if they were overwhelmed by something. Kolo?
Galadin asked. Sudden and ironic relief soothed Raoden's mind. As much as the pain hurt, his insecurity had worried him more. Still, he was not free.
The attacks are getting worse. If they continue, they will take me eventually.
If that happens, Galadin nodded solemnly, you will join the Hoed.
The door will destroy me, Raoden said, ripping my soul apart in a futile attempt to break free.
It isn't alive, it's just a force. And the fact that I am not a viable passage won't stop it from trying.
When it does take me, remember your vow.
Galadin and Kairita nodded. They would take him to the pool in the mountains. Knowing they would take care of him, if he did fall, was enough to keep him going. And enough to make him wish just a little that the day of his failure was not far away.
That doesn't have to happen, though, Sule, Galadin said.
I mean, that Yorn was healed. Maybe something's happening. Maybe something has changed.
Raoden paused. If he really was healed.
What do you mean? Kairita asked.
There was a lot of fuss pulling him from the city, Raoden said. If I were Wyrn, I wouldn't want a Dorethi Elantrian hanging around to bring shame on my religion. I'd send an envoy to pull him out, telling everyone he'd been healed, then hide him back in Fjordal.
We never did get a good look at the man after he was healed, Kairita acknowledged.
Galadin looked a little crestfallen at the line of conversation. He, like others in Elantris, had received a measure of hope from Raethan's healing.
Raoden hadn't said anything outright to discourage the people's optimism. But inside he was more reserved. Since the Yorn's departure, nobody else had been healed. It was a hopeful sign, but somehow Raoden doubted it would mean much of a change for the Elantrian people. They needed to work and improve their own lives, not wait for some external miracle.
He turned back to his studies.
Chapter 38. Serene watched the Yorn with displeased eyes. Raethan no longer gave his sermons at the Dorethi Chapel. There were too many people. Instead, he organized meetings on the edge of the city, where he could stand on Kay's 5-foot border wall, his followers sitting at his feet to listen. The Yorn preached with more vibrancy and enthusiasm than he had before. For now, he was a saint. He had suffered the Sheod and had proven himself superior to its curse. He was, Serene had to admit, an impressive opponent. Outfitted in his red armor, he stood like a bloodied metal statue above the crowd.
It must have been some kind of trick, she noted.
Of course it was, cousin, Lucal said, standing beside her. If we thought otherwise, we might as well join Shu-Dareth. Personally, I look horrible in red.
Your face is too pink,
Serene said offhandedly.
If it was a trick, Serene, Shuden said, then I am at a loss to explain it.
The three of them stood at the periphery of the morning meeting. They had come to see for themselves the amazing numbers Raythan's meetings drew, even on the very day of the king's funeral.
It could have been makeup, Serene said.
That survived the ritual washing? Shuden said.
Maybe the priests were in on it, Lucal said.
Have you ever tried to bribe a Karathi priest, Lucal? Shuden asked pointedly.
Lucal looked around uncomfortably.
I'd rather not answer that question, thank you.
You sound almost as if you believe his miracle, Shuden, Serene said.
I do not discount it, Shuden said.
Why wouldn't God bless one of his devout?
Religious exclusivism is a Karathi and Durethi addition to Shukesig.
Serene sighed, nodding for her friends to follow as she pushed her way through the outlying crowds and walked toward their waiting carriage.
Trick or not, Raythan had an uncomfortably strong hold on the people. If he managed to place a sympathizer on the throne, it would all be over. Aerilan would become a Durethi nation, and only Teod would remain, though probably not for long.
Her companions were undoubtedly thinking along similar lines. Both Lucal and Shuden's faces bore disturbed, contemplative looks. They entered the coach in silent thought. But finally Lucal turned to her, his hawkish features troubled.
"What do you mean my face is too pink?" he asked with a hurt tone.
The ship's mast bore the royal crest of Teod, a gold Aeon Teo on a blue background. Long and thin, there was no faster vessel on the water than a Teoish straight boat. Serene felt it her duty to give the patriarch a better reception than she herself had received upon arriving at those same docks. She didn't like the man, but that was no excuse for incivility. And so she had brought Shuden, Lucal, Eondel, and several of the Count's soldiers as an honor guard. The thin ship came into dock smoothly, sailors throwing out a gangplank as soon as the vessel was secured. A blue-robed form strode past the sailors and down the gangplank with a firm step. Over a dozen attendants and lesser priests followed. The patriarch liked to be well cared for. As Cianolin approached, Serene masked her face with controlled courtesy. The patriarch was a tall man with delicate features. His golden hair was long like that of a woman, and it blended with the enormous gold cape that fluttered behind him. The blue robe was embroidered with so much gold thread, it was difficult at times to see the material underneath. He smiled with the benevolently tolerant face of one who wanted you to know he was patient with your inferiority.
"Your Highness," Cianolin said as he approached, "it has been too long since my old eyes beheld your sweet features."
Serene did her best to smile, curtsying before the patriarch and his old eyes. Cianolin was no more than 40. Though he tried to make himself seem more aged and wise than he really was.
"Your Holiness," she said, "all of Aerilan is blessed by your presence."
He nodded, as if to say that he understood just how fortunate they all were. He turned toward Shuden and the others.
"Who are your companions?"
"My cousin Lucal, and Baron Shuden, and Count Eondel of Aerilan, your Holiness." Each man bowed as she made the introductions.
"Only barons and counts?" Cianolin asked with disappointment.
"Duke Roile sends his greetings, Your Grace," Serene said. "He is busy preparing for King Iodin's burial."
"Ah," Cianolin said.
his luxurious hair, untouched by gray, waving in the sea wind. Serene had wished many times to have locks half as fine as those of the patriarch.
"I assume I am not too late to attend the funeral?"
"No, Your Holiness," Serene said. "It will occur this afternoon."
"Good,"
Cianolin said.
"Come, you may show me to my lodgings now."
That was disappointing, Lucal confessed as soon as they climbed back in their carriage. The patriarch had been given his own vehicle, courtesy of Roile, and the gift had cooled his dissatisfaction at the Duke's absence.
"He's not exactly what you expect, is he?" Serene said.
"That isn't what Lucal meant, Serene," Shuden said. Serene glanced at Lucal.
"What do you mean?"
"I was just hoping for something more entertaining," Lucal said,
twin flops of hair bouncing against his cheeks as he shrugged.
"He has been looking forward to this ever since he heard you describe the patriarch, Your Highness," Eundel explained with a dissatisfied look. "He assumed you two would argue more."
Serene sighed, giving Lucal a withering look.
"Just because I don't like the man doesn't mean I'm going to make a scene, cousin. Remember, I was one of my father's chief diplomats."
Lucal nodded with resignation.
"I will admit, Serene," Shuden said, "your analysis of the patriarch's personality seems accurate. I am left wondering how such a man could be chosen for such an important position."
"By mistake," Serene said curtly. "Cianolin gained the seat about 15 years ago, when he was barely your age. It was just after Wulfdan became Wyrn, and the leaders of Shu-Korath felt threatened by his vigor. For some reason they got it into their minds that they needed to elect a patriarch who was just as young as Wulfdan, if not younger. Cianolin was the result."
Shuden raised an eyebrow.
"I agree completely," Serene said. "But I have to give them a bit of credit. Wulfdan is said to be one of the most handsome men to ever take the Fjordal throne, and the Karathi leaders wanted someone who would be equally impressive."
Lucal snorted.
"Handsome and pretty are two completely different things, cousin. Half the women who see that man will love him. The other half will just be jealous."
Throughout the conversation, Lord Eondel grew progressively more pale. Finally, he found voice for his indignation.
"Remember, my lords and ladies, this is Domai's wholly chosen vessel."
"And he couldn't have picked a vessel more lovely," Lucal quipped, earning him an elbow in the ribs from Serene.
"We will try to make our comments more respectful, Eondel," she apologized. "The patriarch's looks are unimportant, anyway. I'm more interested in why he came."
"Isn't a king's funeral enough of a reason?" Shuden asked.
"Perhaps," Serene said, unconvinced, as the carriage pulled to a halt outside the Karathi chapel. "Come on. Let's see His Holiness settled as soon as possible. The funeral is in less than 2 hours, and after that, it appears that I'm getting married." With no obvious heir, and with Isshin completely unhinged by her husband's disgrace and subsequent death, Duke Roile took the burden of the funeral arrangements upon himself.
"Pagan murderer or not, Aiden was once my friend," the Duke had explained. "He brought stability to this country in a time of need. For that much, he at least deserves a decent burial."
Omine had requested that they not use the Karathi chapel for the services, so Roile decided to use the king's throne room instead. The choice made Serene a little uncomfortable. The throne room was the same place they would hold the wedding. However, Roile thought it symbolic that the same room would serve both the passing of the old king and the ascension of the new. The decorations were tasteful and subdued. Roile, characteristically frugal, had planned arrangements and colors that would work for both a funeral and a wedding. The room's pillars were wrapped with white ribbons, and there were various arrangements of flowers, mostly white roses or abertines. Serene entered the room, looking to the side with a smile. Near the front, next to one of the pillars, was the place where she had first set up her easel. It seemed like so long ago, though barely more than a month had passed. Forgotten with shame were the days when she had been considered an empty-headed girl. The nobility now regarded her with something akin to awe. Here was the woman who had manipulated the king, then made a fool of him, and finally toppled him from his throne. They would never love her as they had loved Raoden, but she would accept their admiration as an inferior substitute. To the side, Serene saw Duke Telrai. The bald, overdressed man actually looked displeased, rather than simply uncaring. Roile had announced his wedding to Serene only a few hours earlier, giving the pompous Telrai a little time to consider a response. Serene met Telrai's eyes and sensed frustration in the man's bearing. She had expected something from him, some kind of attempt to block their marriage, but he had made no move. What held him back? Roile's arrival called the group to order, and the crowd fell silent. Roile walked to the front of the room, where the king's casket lay sealed, and began to speak. It was a short offering. Roile spoke of how Iodine had forged a country from the ashes of Elantris, and how he had given them all their titles. He warned them against making the same mistake as the king, counseling them not to forget Domai in their riches and comfort. He closed by advocating that they refrain from speaking ill of the deceased, remembering that Domai would see to Iodine's soul. And such was none of their concern. With that, he motioned for several of Eandel's soldiers to pick up the casket. However, another form stepped forward before they could go more than a few steps. "I have something to add," Cianalyn announced. Roile paused in surprise. Cianalyn smiled, showing perfect teeth to the room. He had already changed clothing, and was wearing a robe similar to the first, except it had a wide golden band running up his back and down his chest, instead of the embroidery.
"Of course, Your Holiness," Roile said.
"What is this about?" Shuden whispered.
Serene simply shook her head as Cianalyn walked up to stand behind the casket. He regarded the crowd with a self-important smile, melodramatically whipping a scroll from the sleeve of his robe.
10 years ago, just after his ascension, King Iodine came to me and made this statement.
Cianalyn said,
"You can see his seal at the bottom, as well as my own. He ordered that I present this to Aerilan at his funeral, or 15 years from the date of its creation, whichever arrived first." Roile moved across the side of the room until he was standing next to Serene and Shuden. His eyes showed curiosity and concern. At the front of the room, Cianalyn broke the seal on the scroll and unrolled it.
"My lords and ladies of Aerilan," Cianalyn read, holding the paper before him as if it were a shining relic. "Let the will of your first king, Iodine of Kaei, be known. I swear solemnly before Domai, my ancestors, and whatever other gods may be watching, that this proclamation is lawful. If it be that I am dead, or for some other reason unable to continue as your king, then let it be understood that I made this decree of sound mind, and it is binding according to the laws of our nation. I order that all titles of noble rank are to be frozen as they stand, to be handed down from generation to generation, father to son, as is commonly done in other nations. Let wealth no longer be the measure of a man's nobility. Those who have held to their rank this long have proven themselves worthy. The attached document is a codified list of inheritance laws patterned after those in Teod. Let this document become the law of our country. Cianalyn lowered the paper to a stunned room. There was no sound, except for a quiet exhale from beside Serene. Finally, people began to speak in hushed, excited tones.
"So that's what he was planning all along," Roile said softly. "He knew how unstable his system was. He intended it that way. He let them go at each other's throats, just to see who would be strong enough, or treacherous enough, to survive."
"A good plan, if an unconscionable one," Shuden said. "Perhaps we underestimated Iodin's craftiness." Cianalyn still stood at the front of the room, eyeing the nobles with knowing looks.
"Why him?" Shuden asked.
"Because he's absolute," Serene said. "Not even Raythan would dare question the word of the Patriarch. Not yet, at least. If Cianalyn says that order was made 10 years ago, then everyone in Aerilon is bound to agree with him." Shuden nodded.
"Does this change our plans?"
"Not at all," Roile said, shooting a look toward Telrai, whose expression had turned even darker than before.
"It strengthens our claim. My union with Iodin's house will be even more creditable."
"Telrai still bothers me," Serene said, as the Patriarch added a few platitudes about the wisdom of adopting the inheritance system. "His claim is definitely weakened by this. But will he accept it?"
"He'll have to," Roile said with a smile. "None of the nobility would dare follow him now. Iodin's proclamation grants the thing they have all been wanting. Stable titles. The nobility aren't going to risk crowning a man who has no valid blood claim to the throne. The legality of Iodin's declaration doesn't matter. Everyone is going to act as if it were church doctrine."
Eondel's soldiers were finally allowed to come forward and pick up the casket. Faced with no precedent regarding the proper burial of an Aerilish king, Roile had turned to the culture most similar to his own, Teod. The Teods favored large ceremonies, often burying their greatest kings with an entire shipload of riches, if not the ship itself. While such was obviously unfit for Iodin, Roile had adapted other ideas. A Teoish funeral procession was a long, drawn-out exercise, often requiring the attendants to walk an hour or more to reach the prepared site. Roile had included this tradition, with a slight modification. A line of carriages waited outside the palace. To Serene, using vehicles seemed disrespectful. But Shuden had made a good point. "Roile is planning to make a bid for the crown this very afternoon," the Jindo had explained. "He can't afford to offend the plush lords and ladies of Aerilon by requiring a forced march all the way out of the city." Besides, Serene had added to herself, why worry about disrespect? This is, after all, only Iodin. With the carriages,
It took only about 15 minutes to reach the burial site. At first, it looked like a large hole that had been excavated, but careful inspection would have shown it to be a natural depression in the earth.